What's Right with Nick Wright is a rapidly growing podcast from the Fox Sports Podcast Network. You may know Nick Wright from co-hosting FS1's First Things First. This podcast gives Nick a chance to develop, deep dive, and defend his sharpest opinions. During the show, Nick faces off against a ticking clock, a team of producers, and even his own family to try and get his points across. New episodes drop Monday, Thursday, and Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
Goats have home lives too.
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Rich Eisen.
Hello, Rich Eisen.
Rich Eisen. Oh, that's Susie Eisen's husband.
The Rich Eisen Show. And now, sitting in for Rich, here's Dan Schwartzman.
It is hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show on a Wednesday, holiday week. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich, always a good time, sitting in the big boy chair. Rich will be back next week. As we hit 2023, hope everybody's excited to turn the calendar from 2022 to 2023. Big weekend coming up in college football. More bowl games, because that's all we have is a ton of bowl games. Way too many bowl games, although I'm glad for the college kids to get to have one more game, a lot of them, and travel to some nice warm locale and enjoy themselves. Although, you know, not a lot of people show up, and very few people probably watch some of these games as well. But Saturday, the college football semifinal playoff games. It is TCU, Michigan, Georgia, Ohio State. Some phenomenal matchups coming up. And the transfer portal continues to roll right along. Guys going in there, guys switching schools. It's become the free agent frenzy of college athletics. David Ubin, he is the national college football writer for The Athletic, joining us here. And David, happy holidays, and also happy New Year's to you and your family.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Before we get into the big matchups coming up Saturday, are there too many bowl games for your liking these days?
No. I mean, I think last week the most watched cable program was a bowl game. I would argue there's too few bowl games. Let's play a bowl game during the weekday, every day, up until Labor Day. Let's make it happen. You know, I am a college football lifer and love the sport. I watch just about as much of them as I can. So, no, I would be on the too few bowl game side of the fence.
So you want everybody to make a bowl game. You want everybody to play in a bowl game.
Let's play four or five bowl games for each team, even the two-win teams. Let's stretch this out. Listen, if it's Tuesday and it's 3 p.m. in June, who's saying no to having a bowl game on television?
Hey, I watched Miami of Ohio UAB, all right, the Bahama Bowl.
Let's do it.
I am one of those insane people like you that'll watch a bowl game just because you're right. What else is there to watch a lot of times on TV, especially 2 o'clock in the afternoon? It's that or taking care of my one-year-old, right? Let the nanny handle that. I'm watching college football. Now, I want to get to this, David. This transfer portal to me is just wild and wacky, and frankly, it's the bizarro world of college football that we are in. 1,000 guys get in there. Only like 40% of them actually find new homes. Is this something that has to be somewhat more regulated, or do you kind of like this open concept of guys just saying, hey, I didn't get to play last year. I sat behind a guy. I'm going to go somewhere else now.
Well, it can't be regulated, quite frankly, because anytime that, you know, anyone in college football attempts to restrict player movement, you know, that's going to be perceived as restricting player earning potential. And, you know, with the Alston decision, nobody in the NCAA is doing, you know, is going to do anything to change any of this. So, you know, they're just going to play everything with kid gloves. Now, the transfer portal, every situation is different. You know, some guys certainly are leaving because, you know, there's good offers out there and they might be able to make some more money. Some guys might not be making the best decision for their future. There's no sort of, you know, one-size-fits-all approach. But what I do think is that you're going to see the guys who it didn't work out for, I think that you're going to see some guys learning some lessons and perhaps, you know, players in years to come applying those future lessons as they sort of figure out, hey, the grass isn't always greener, you know, on the other side of the fence. And so, but right now, when you have, you know, you jump in the portal, you don't have to sit out a year. Everybody seems to want to test the market, and you know, for some guys, it's worked out great. You can restart your career. You can make some more money. You can go to a program that's a better fit for you. You can get on the field. And some guys are sort of lying to themselves about, oh, well, my coach just hates me, and I got to go somewhere else. And it's like, well, maybe your coach hates you because you don't actually, you know, work as hard as you need to, and it's going to be the same story the next place you go. So, again, I think, you know, the transfer portal, it's something that has been sort of a long time coming in college football, at least the free transfer, you know, for players who aren't paid. You can call it a one-year, whatever they used to call it, I don't know, the one-year having to sit out. I call it a non-compete clause for a job that did not pay you, which seems incredibly unfair. So, you know, you got to learn life lessons. For some guys, it could be the best thing that ever happened to them, leaving their program and going somewhere else. You know, you look at, obviously, Joe Burrow and Justin Fields and guys that have left programs, big programs, when they couldn't get on the field and have seen their fortunes absolutely change in an instant. And some guys go in there and they don't ever find a new home and end up having to go to a much lower level and get a worse education and all those things. And so I think as we have this tool longer sport, guys will figure out better how to wield it.
National college football writer for The Athletic, David Ubben, joining us here on The Rich Eisen Show. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich on this Wednesday. I love it when the coaches that seemingly always speak negatively of the transfer portal actually use it to their advantage. I talk about guys like Nick Saban, right? It's amazing to me how much talent he can pick from other schools. I mean, Gibbs, Williams, he's had all Americans come from other schools and stuck right into his, you know, right into his lineup. Now, you know, when you think about Nick Saban, the fact that he can recruit high schools better than anybody, now you throw in the fact that he's obviously very good at maneuvering this transfer portal. How much deadlier does it make a guy like this?
Well, I think that's the thing is for all the changes in the sport, whether that's the expanded playoff or the transfer portal or all those things, the best programs, the Georgias, the Alabamas, the Ohio States, are going to learn how to make it work for them. And you know, places with advantages can keep finding advantages no matter how the rules change. And I think, you know, we're seeing that with Alabama a little bit. You know, Georgia didn't take any transfers last year. They're already, you know, grabbing a couple receivers out of there. You can fix, you know, the holes in your roster. And then, of course, like at a place like USC, we've seen that, hey, when you're a good coach that has a big draw, or, you know, certainly Deion Sanders at Colorado, when you land somewhere, you can flip that roster in a hurry. So, you know, the transfer portal, it just has changed everything in the sport, from program building to obviously the player decisions to power programs, you know, being able to sustain themselves over time and using it as a tool to, hey, you know, for whatever reason we have a deficiency at, you know, at right guard or at running back or whatever, you know, we can grab one or two guys and we can fix whatever weakness we might have had the next season. So it's fascinating. I mean, I think it's, people want to make it kind of a bigger deal than it is and that it did change a lot. But at the end of the day, it's sort of one more thing that, you know, can help differentiate, you know, the best coaches and best programs from those who, you know, don't really know what they're doing.
Yeah, no question about it. You know, Deion Sanders is a guy that leaves an HBC school, of course, Jackson State. He goes to Colorado. Eddie George is a head coach right now at HBC school. Now we find that Ed Reed has been hired by Bethune-Cookman. Look, I like the trend. I think it highlights, you know, a division of college football that, to me, since really, you know, Grambling and Eddie Robinson hasn't gotten the love that it deserves. And I think, you know, Deion Sanders, of course, brought more attention to it. But you got to love it, Dave, to have these big-name guys, especially now in Ed Reed, that's going to go. He, you know, he coached with the Buffalo Bills. He's been an advisor at the University of Miami for the last 3 years. Now he gets the opportunity. To me, kind of opened it also opens up an opportunity for ex-players who have been coaching here and there in lesser roles to have that opportunity to now maybe showcase their abilities for bigger jobs. But is it unhealthy, though, for these, you know, historic black colleges to become now the training ground of coaches with Deion leaving after just two seasons, for instance?
I mean, I think it's tough because, you know, Deion Sanders is Deion Sanders. You know, he's sort of one of one in a lot of ways. And, you know, as much as you see, like, the Ed Reeds and the Eddie George and all that stuff, and you know, even Hugh Jackson back there, you know, it's nobody quite has the same draw that Deion does. And then certainly, you know, some of the administrative stuff that he showed to be able to build that program and get it in the shape that it did. So, you know, it's tough because it's more opportunities. You want those opportunities to only come at HBCUs, and certainly there's a lot of black coaches who come up in more traditional ways and have been in coaching longer, and you hate to see guys like that passed up. But if guys like, you know, if Ed Reed could come in and be successful, then, you know, who cares what his background was? It's kind of the same thing with Deion Sanders. And I've talked to a lot of black coaches as well that, hey, most of them are rooting for Deion. Just about everybody I've talked to is say, hey, if he succeeds, whatever that looks like, it's just more doors, and more reason for athletic directors who might not look like me, might not act like me, to understand, hey, these things can be done a different way. And I think that's, you know, at the bottom line, that I think is good for the sport.
Yeah, I think it's very healthy for the sport. It's good for the sport. And I'm interested to see what Ed Reed, who obviously had a Hall of Fame career in the NFL and the greatest safeties in history, what he will do, bringing his reputation and, you know, I mean, his abilities to hopefully build guys into NFL players will certainly help. Coming up, of course, is the college football semifinal matchups Saturday, December 31st, number 3 TCU versus number 2 Michigan. Is Michigan's defense a little too tough for TCU? As good as that offense is with Dugan, is Michigan's defense going to be too tough for them?
I think so. I mean, ultimately, we've seen over and over again these semifinals. Greatness really shines in these games, and the reason we've had blowouts is because there's not always been four teams that have been sort of teams with a case of the best in the country. And I think you look at how this season played out, Michigan and Georgia were clearly the best two teams in the country, pretty much unimpeachable resumes, have looked excellent almost every week. TCU and Ohio State have not had that same situation. So I think TCU is a good team, but Michigan has looked like the best, you know, a strong case of the best team in the country. You know, right there next to Georgia. So I think the defense is too strong. I'm not sure TCU's off or defense is going to be able to hold up on the other end of things. It's, you know, they'll put some points on the board, but I'm not sure either of these semifinals are going to be very close.
You think Georgia's that much better than Ohio State?
I do. Georgia, when you look at how tough, like, explosive Michigan, and just as tough, and I think that, you know, they have some really hard questions that they've got to answer about the level of toughness in their program. And if they can do that, good for them. But I haven't seen a lot of reason to believe that Ohio State's going to be able to do that. And when C.J. Stroud has played really good defenses with good interior, good DBs, you know, he's really struggled. And I'm not sure that I see a lot of reason to think that this game's going to be much different.
You know, there's an interesting debate, and that is, how good of a coach is Ryan Day? You know, the Ohio State recruits as good as anybody in this country. He's up there with Kirby Smart and Nick Saban. He brings an unbelievable talent, bunch of first-round picks. But for all the talent they've had, they've won a ton of regular season games. He's 45-5 at Ohio State since taking over in 2018. But against big teams and in terms of playing in the playoffs, he hasn't had much success. How do you view Ryan Day at Ohio State right now?
Well, you know, I don't even think it's as much the playoff, you know, failures as much as you can't get bullied by Michigan 2 years in a row, especially not on your own field. And I'm not sure it's much more complicated than that. You know, if they get, you know, punked by Georgia in this game, I mean, you're going to be, for better or worse, for all that regular season success, you know, you're going to be entering the season on the hot seat. And I think, you know, that's the standard at Ohio State. And when you look at it, you know, I get that you can look at the gaudy numbers, but how many times has Ohio State been the better team, far more talented than who they're lining up against? It's just about every week. And how many times has Ohio State beaten a team that maybe they weren't as good as? And that hasn't happened a ton. So you want to get ahead of this and say, hey, we're going to fix this before, you know, it gets to be a situation that, you know, is tougher to come back from. So this is a huge situation. They don't have to necessarily beat Georgia. It would obviously help him a lot if they could. You know, that's going to be something that, you know, if they can go ahead and be competitive in this game, that's going to go a long ways to helping him reverse some of these narratives about himself and the program. But if they get punked, I mean, it's going to be a long off season and some very serious questions going into 2023 about Ryan Day's future at the program.
Doesn't it kind of feel like John Cooper part two? You know, a guy wins a ton of regular season games, but, you know, can't beat Michigan. And in the end, that does him in. And you're right. If, you know, you can't be losing 2 years in a row and getting blown out this year at home at the Horseshoe, you know, I don't care if you win, you know, 90% of your games. If you can't win that game against Michigan and you don't have, you know, you're not winning national championships at some point in Columbus, Ohio, your tenure is going to end. It did for Cooper.
Yeah, you hear that comparison every now and then. I think the most interesting thing would be, you know, what happens if you beat Georgia and then you turn the page and here comes Michigan again?
Oh.
and then you get to the national championship and the same thing happens. You know, that we saw UNC and Duke in the Final Four. I mean, I'm fascinated to see, You know, that's a really entertaining scenario. But, you know, they got to get past Georgia first. And, again, like I said, maybe they surprise us. Maybe things are different. Maybe this team is tougher than it looks. But I think we've seen them all season. When they've really gotten punched in the mouth and dealt with teams that they could hang with them athletically and win the battle in the line of scrimmage, they have not looked impressive. So if Ohio State wins this game or even is competitive in this game, they're going to have to look like a much better team than the one that we've seen sort of look a little shaky from time to time this season.
David, what a scenario. They beat Georgia, they get to the national championship game, and they lose again to Michigan. It will be a failure of a season. I went to college at Ohio University. I have a lot of friends who are Buckeye fans, and they will tell me that will not be a successful season, losing not once but twice to Michigan. I kind of want to see that scenario play out just because I kind of want to see the reaction. You're right. It's like the car crash on the highway. You slow down and you see what happened because of the fact it's so incredible. David Ubin, national college football writer for The Athletic. David, appreciate the time. Happy New Year.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Awesome stuff there. What a scenario that would be. That would be something. You somehow beat Georgia, you face Michigan in the national championship game, and you lose again to the Wolverines, and they are national champs. Ryan Day goes from winning, you know, one game away from winning a national championship to potentially being on a hot seat because he just can't beat the Wolverines. Unbelievable. All right, this is it. The putt to win the tournament. If you sink it, the championship is yours, but on your backswing, your hat falls over your eyes. Is this how you're running your business? Poor visibility because you're still relying on spreadsheets and outdated finance software. To see the full picture, you need to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is a number one cloud financial system to power your growth. With visibility and control of your financials, inventory, HR, planning, budgeting, and more, NetSuite is everything you need to grow all in one place. With NetSuite, you can automate your processes and close your books in no time while staying well ahead of your competition. 93% of surveyed businesses increased their visibility and control after upgrading to NetSuite. Over 32,000 businesses already use NetSuite. For the new year, NetSuite has a new financing program for those ready to upgrade at netsuite.com/richradio. Head to netsuite.com/richradio for this special one-of-a-kind financing offer on the number one financial system for growing businesses. netsuite.com/richradio. One more time, netsuite.com/richradio. College football talk. What a scenario. Ryan Day, he wins a ton of games, but he doesn't seem to win the big ones. Should he be on a hot seat if it all ends coming up Saturday against Georgia in the National College Football Semifinal? Dan Schwartzman, Hour 2 on a Wednesday, The Rich Eisen Show.
This is it. The putt to win the tournament. If you sink it, the championship is yours. But on your backswing, your hat falls over your eyes. Is this how you're running your business? Poor visibility because you're relying on spreadsheets and outdated finance software? To see the full picture, you need to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system to power your growth. With visibility and control of your financials, inventory, HR, planning, budgeting, and more, NetSuite is everything you need to grow all in one place. With NetSuite, you can automate your processes and close your books in no time while staying well ahead of your competition. 93% of surveyed businesses increased their visibility and control after upgrading to NetSuite. Over 28,000 businesses already use NetSuite. For the new year, NetSuite is a new financing program for those ready to upgrade at netsuite.com/richpod. Head to netsuite.com/richpod for this special one-of-a-kind financing offer on the number one financial system for growing businesses. netsuite.com/richpod. Did you know that driving high is considered driving under the influence? That's right. Driving under the influence of marijuana is against the law in every state, even in states where marijuana is legal. That means driving high could get you a DUI. And if you think law enforcement officers can't tell when you're driving high, you're wrong. Your friends can tell. Your coworkers can tell. Even your parents can tell. Everyone can tell. So, what makes you think that law enforcement officers don't know when you're driving high? Driving under the influence of marijuana can slow your response time and change how you perceive time and speed. So, even if you think you're fine to drive when you're high, you're not. Because the bottom line is, if you feel different, you drive different. And driving high is driving under the influence. So remember, drive high, get a DUI. Paid for by NHTSA.
21 past the hour, hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich on this Wednesday. College football playoffs on Saturday. You know, Ryan Day dominates a regular season, as he's done at Ohio State. The guy has never lost more than two games in a year. 2018, he takes over. He goes 3-0. 2019, he's 13-1. 2020, of course, the shortened season due to COVID, he's 7-1. 2021, 11-2. This year, 11-1. He's 31-2 in conference play, the two losses both to Michigan. He's finished in the top five of the college football polls. This will be the third year out of four that he does so. And the worst was he finished sixth in the AP poll last year with his two losses. And he seems to be a really good guy. People seem to like him. He is, a guy that is a respected coach. He's a heck of a recruiter as well. But the problem is, you know, winning regular season games is all fine and dandy, and it's great for your resume. But when you're in a place like Ohio State, you're expected to win more than just regular season games and beat up on on bad Big Ten teams. And he hasn't gotten the job done there. College football playoff record, you know, is not great. They won the Rose Bowl last year, whoop-de-doo. It wasn't a college football playoff game. 2020, they lose in the college football national championship game. 2019, they lose in the Fiesta Bowl. And, you know, he plays, obviously, in New Year's Six Bowls all the time, or college football playoff bowls. Yeah, that's great. But you're Ohio State. And the level of talent on Ohio State is, frankly, mind-boggling, right? You look at that team. Just look at that team. And you can't tell me that that team isn't loaded with NFL players. It is. Absolutely is. C.J. Stroud, considered a top five pick when he decides to come out. All right, the running back position, they have at least two players that are probably going to be NFL draft picks between Williams and Henderson. At wide receiver, it's just unbelievable riches. Marvin Harrison Jr. is an incredible stud. He's going to be a first-round pick. Emeka Egbuka is going to be a first-round pick. He's just a sophomore. He was a top recruit. Julian Fleming is a guy that also was a high recruit who probably next year puts up numbers. Jackson Smith and Jigba is also a guy that, highly thought of as well. Battled injuries this year after having a tremendous season last year with 95 catches, 1,600 yards. He'll be a first-round pick as well when he decides to come out. Maybe he doesn't this year due to, of course, you know, having not played much, but if he comes back next year, who knows? So, obviously, a ton of talent. Offensive lineman always going in the top couple of rounds as well. There's so many good players there. He should be winning more games. And I mean the big games. But he's just not doing it consistently, and I think that's the incredible thing is, yes, if in fact, as crazy as this sounds, if in fact they lose to Georgia on Saturday, as many believe they will, and there's yet another season where, sure, they're going to finish in the top five in the college football polls, they don't win the big game, at some point, he's going to start feeling that seat warm up. Because at a place like Ohio State, it's national championships or bust. And by the way, it's at least winning over Michigan or bust. If you're not going to win national championships, you have to consistently beat Michigan. Like, the crazy part about that rivalry, and I lived in the state of Ohio for 5 years, you know, in college. If you don't win a national title, like, say Ohio State has a bad season, say they go 7-4, but if they beat Michigan in those seven wins, amazingly speaking, Buckeye fans, for the most part, are fairly happy with the year. Because you have the bragging rights over your next-door neighbors. It's a great rivalry. It is. Michigan-Ohio State is a great... It's Texas-Oklahoma, Alabama-Auburn.
USC-Notre Dame.
USC-Notre Dame, fine. I'll give you that, Art. Yeah, that's another good one. You know, in terms of the best rivalries in college football, those are the games. I love Army Navy, of course. You know, Washington State, Oregon State.
Go Navy.
All right, that's right. You are a Marine. You like how I said that? Right? I didn't say you were a Marine. I said you are a Marine.
Always a Marine.
Exactly right. Once a Marine, always a Marine. No such thing as a ex-Marine.
Nope.
That's interesting. Why is that? Like, because you know, like, no one says you're still in the Army, right? They say, oh, he was in the Army. So why is the Marines different, Art? Is there an explanation for this?
Because we're better than the Army?
Well, I'm sure that's what it is. But still, is there an actual explanation for this besides that?
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Is there truly a rivalry there?
Oh, yeah.
Marines and Army? Really?
Marines don't like any of the other services.
So if you end up in a bar, a bunch of Marines, a bunch of, you know, Army
guys.
We
call them dog faces.
Could be trouble?
Army or dog faces.
Really?
Navy or squids.
Really? How about Air Force? Entitled?
Yeah, entitled.
But you have to catch a ride with them, though. That's the thing, though, right?
I know. I flew out through to Desert Storm on an Air Force transport, yes.
So you have to be nice to them to a point.
Not really.
Well, the Marines don't have transport planes.
I know.
Right?
They have the only thing we don't have.
Yeah, you have attack helicopters, and you have you know close air support.
Yeah,
but that's about it.
We needed to get there fast, so we couldn't take the Navy ships because we needed.
So you said, "Sigh, all right, we'll take a ride. We'll take this ride from the Air Force."
Yeah, absolutely.
All right,
and I rode on a C-5 Galaxy, and the seats are pointed backwards, so screwed up the Air Force.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so you don't even know if you're coming and going.
I would get so airsick.
Oh man!
I would seriously get airsick having to face. I cannot sit backwards like on a bus or anything like that. If I had to sit backwards on an airplane for like 13 hours,
we had a couple layovers, but it was a 22-hour trip to
Dahran,
Saudi Arabia.
Oh my goodness, that is a long trip. Yeah, but you caught a ride with the Air Force, so they at least got you there safely. So you have to respect them a bit, I guess, right?
I guess.
What a rivalry. So we'll throw that rivalry up there as well, right? That rivalry is up there with Ohio State, Michigan, and USC, Notre Dame, and Auburn, Alabama, and all that. So we'll go with that. We'll stick to that story then.
Well, yeah, the Navy coach got fired because he couldn't beat Army.
Yeah, I think he was the highest paid federal employee for a long time. I think he was the highest paid.
Even higher than the president, huh?
Oh, yeah. The president makes $440,000 a year, I believe, is what the president makes. And Ken, I can't pronounce his name, and I'm not even going to try to butcher it. He was making, I think, like a few million dollars at least.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, so he was actually the highest paid federal employee, I believe. Couldn't beat Army. And you know what? If you can't beat Army, you know what happens?
You get fired.
You don't have a job. Yeah, you don't have a job. And by the way, though, I think they fired him in the locker room right after the game.
Yes, they did.
I mean, come on. Let's have a little bit more respect for the guy who put Navy on the map for a while, right? I mean, I know Johnson did a nice job there before he left for, what was it, I think Georgia Tech. But, like, have some respect for the guy. He did a nice job overall. I know the last couple of years have been a little rougher, but come on. The guy won a bunch of games at Navy. Can you at least wait till you get back to Annapolis before you fire him?
No.
Come on. That's terrible. Come on, Art. I also think that's the only game in America, right, where the entire student bodies of both team are in attendance.
Yeah, it seems
I
like
I saw
it.
That
yeah.
somewhere. Yeah.
Midshipmen. Yeah,
I think everybody goes. I think everybody goes in terms of midshipmen. And I believe everybody goes in terms
Army
of the Naval Academy.
Cadets, yeah. Army cadets.
The cadets, yeah. That's pretty cool, by the way, that everybody goes. And, like, everybody's there to kind of watch and cheer on their mates. That's
really
cool.
I mean, every school should be that way. I mean, I know you have a lot of people who go to the school that aren't sports fans. But, I mean, you should – it's an event. It's a one-time – you know, even if you only go once, it's a once-in-a-lifetime event to be at a football game, you know?
But then again, how many kids are in the – what's the total undergraduate enrollment? I'm reading it's about 4,600. That's a lot, though. You're right. To get that many kids to come, you know, travel down to you know, to wherever the game's going to be, Baltimore or Philly or Washington, whatever it is, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, very.
That is, yeah, 42-94 in terms of cadets at West Point. I'm sure Annapolis isn't that far off. Wow, that's interesting. That is really interesting how it is. But that's a great rivalry, too. Army-Navy's a great one, and it's a tradition that continues to live on. So, you know, but that's the whole point, is if you have a tough season, you can turn things around in the mind of people by beating your biggest rival.
Yeah, and Ryan Day has not done that. He would have beat Army. I mean, it was that close.
You're right. If he had beaten Army, he probably gets one more opportunity. But when you can't beat your hated rival, you know, it makes the decision a little bit more easier. And that's exactly what we saw. And that's exactly what's happening with Ryan Day. Ryan Day may not lose 10 games in... Listen, this is a guy that may not lose double-digit games in 10 years, okay? It's a possibility. But if all your losses are to Michigan, then you're not going to keep your job. And I mentioned the name John Cooper. People forget John Cooper was a very successful head coach at Ohio State. And he just could not, though, beat Michigan. And when he couldn't beat Michigan, what ended up happening was he obviously wasn't going to last. So John Cooper was at Ohio State from, 1988 to 2000. And his overall record was 111-43-4. That's pretty good, you know? And by the way, he had a stretch in the middle there where he, you know, barely lost games. Finished second in the country twice. I mean, overall, a very successful tenure at Ohio State. But if you're not going to beat Michigan, sorry. You're not going to win. And you're not going to keep your job. That's exactly how it is. And by the way, I don't really have a problem with that. To be honest with you, I don't have a serious problem with that. And I say that because, you know, part of being the head coach at a big-time college football program, and most college football programs do have some sort of a rivalry, is to continue to embarrass the rival. And, you know, Urban Meyer embarrassed Jim Harbaugh for years. You know, Michigan didn't win that game for years before they've won the last couple. But Art, you brought up a good point during the break, and that is if Jim Harbaugh wins a national championship at Michigan this year, does he bolt for the NFL?
If I were the Lions, I would do everything to get him.
But that's the whole point, is, you know, there will be opportunities. Every time there is the coaching cycle, there always seems to be an opportunity available for Jim Harbaugh, and he has turned it down because, look, I mean, the fact is, you know, Michigan is his alma mater. It's his dream job, apparently, and he has lasted there longer than people thought. I mean, for a long time, remember, he wasn't the most successful head coach at Michigan. It was, you know, people thought he was on a hot seat and that maybe he should be let go. But now that he's winning games and now that he is obviously beating Ohio State, people are singing a whole different tune. So my point is, if you win the national championship, is it time for him to leave? Does it make sense for Jim Harbaugh to walk away on top? Or do you kind of stay and hope that you've built yourself somewhat of an empire? You know,
he's
I guess that's the other option.
Prove. Got nothing else to prove.
Okay, but in the NFL, okay, but how about success? But how about, like, you know, longevity of success? Maybe that's what you want to prove.
His brother's in the NFL, so I think he wants to get back at his brother.
Or maybe he wants to show people, you know, after, you know, he was successful he was obviously a successful coach at, you know, San Francisco. It took him to the Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Yeah, so maybe that's where people, you know, maybe that's what he's thinking. Okay, you know, I won with the 49ers. I kind of got a raw deal there. Maybe it's time for me to give it another shot. Okay, maybe that's what it is. And again, he will have the opportunities to attempt it, no question. Somebody, if Jim Harbaugh says, I am ready to come back and be a head coach in the NFL, teams will line up to bring him in. Especially if he's coming off winning a national championship, there's no question he will have that opportunity. But if you're Jim Harbaugh, do you want to take that opportunity? And I say it because of this. You win the national championship, you're beating Ohio State, he's got incredible job security right now. One thing we know about Jim Harbaugh is he does wear out his welcome, right? This is a guy that seemingly does wear out his welcome fairly quickly. As successful as he was with the 49ers, it didn't end well there, right? It didn't end well. So my point is,
he's
got to
pick the right spot, though.
Yeah, and players tire of him. The players at some point
can't pick
will get
Denver
sick of him.
Or Indy.
Yeah, but the players are going to get sick of him. That's the whole point. Is at some point there will be some disconnect between him and the players. And that's going to lead to him leaving or being let go or fired regardless of the success. Because he is kind of a strange guy, right? He's a curmudgeon. He doesn't seem to be the friendliest guy. I've seen him a couple of times, and I wouldn't say he's the friendliest guy. And I just think that, you know, he rubs people wrong. So he's got a shelf life of 4 or 5 years with an NFL job before he just kind of, you know, he gets himself out of that situation because he's just not a guy that people want to work with, I guess. But if you're at Michigan and he's now resonating with these college kids, right, they may not like him per se, but if he's winning games and getting them to the NFL, then who cares? Nick Saban doesn't seem to be the coolest dude in the world, right? Bill Belichick's not, but if there's success, guys want to play for you because either in college, they prepare you well enough to get to the next level and all these guys want to play in the NFL, or in the NFL, you may not like the guy, but if he's winning championships, hey, you get the Super Bowl rings, why not? That's your legacy. So my whole point is, for Jim Harbaugh, he is in the perfect position here. Why leave college? He's making $10 million a year. He's not going to make much more in the NFL. He's got more job security now than he's going to ever have in the NFL. He's got a good thing going there at Michigan. He loves it there. Why not just stay and see if you can win multiple championships? Why stop at one?
If I'm the Lions, I back up the Brinks truck for
him. Oh, yeah. Listen, teams will back up the Brinks truck for him. I do believe that would happen. I do believe teams will call. They will make the pilgrimage to Ann Arbor to sit down with him. I think he will at least express interest and listen, as he should. And maybe somebody does offer him a ridiculous amount of money to leave Michigan and go coach them. But it's got to be the right situation. So what is the right situation, okay? Let's take a look at this real quick, okay? Who's going to be available? Who's looking for a head coach? I don't think anybody in the AFC East is looking for a head coach. I know there's like whispers about Robert Saleh and the Jets. I don't believe that's the case. I think But if they do, it's Sean Payton, okay? If they don't think Saleh can figure out the quarterback position, then they'll go after Sean Payton, all right? It's not going to be Jim Harbaugh, I don't think. In the AFC North, I mean, Cleveland, you know, Tomlin's not going anywhere with Pittsburgh unless he decides to leave on his own, regardless of them somewhat struggling. But, you know, Cleveland could be a place. All right, I mean, the Cleveland Browns have underachieved. Deshaun Watson's been terrible since coming back. So you kind of wonder, is that potentially going to be a position that opens up? Because there is that belief that the Browns could win some games. Kevin Stefanski's not winning the games right now. Maybe they look to make that change. AFC South. Indy. I doubt Jeff Saturday should not be able to keep that job. Houston's going to be open. Lovie Smith's not going to stay there. But do you want to coach Houston if you're Jim Harbaugh? No.
No.
You want to coach Indy?
No.
You know, I don't think Vrabel's getting fired, although they've had a tough season. They're in the midst of a 5-game losing streak. I don't think Vrabel's getting let go of Tennessee. AFC West. Denver's looking for a head coach, and
no,
Russell Wilson's there. But wait a minute. But you know what, though? They have a good defense, right? Jim Harbaugh's got a big ego. Maybe he thinks he can help out Russell Wilson. If he does, it's a good job, right? If you think Russell Wilson is salvageable, why not? Right? It's not terrible.
Yeah.
That could be an opportunity. Just throwing it out there, right? I don't think Josh McDaniels is going anywhere at the Raiders, although maybe he should.
He should.
But I don't think he's going anywhere. NFC East, no one's getting fired. NFC North, the Bears aren't making a change again. Packers aren't making a change. I know you mentioned the Lions, but I mean, as crazy as this sounds, the Lions are in the playoff hunt. Dan Campbell's not getting fired.
He's not a good coach, though.
But he's not getting fired. Players seem to like playing for him. He's not getting fired. Here's a good one. NFC South. Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Look, Todd Bowles seems like the nicest guy, and he's a heck of a defensive mind. But how many more opportunities do you give Todd Bowles to show he's not a head coach? He didn't do a good job with the Jets. Hasn't done a good job with Tampa Bay this year. If Tom Brady is coming back for another year, does Jim Harbaugh say, hey, you know what? I can probably win a Super Bowl next year. Is Tampa Bay a good opportunity? I don't think they are, by the way, because if you're relying on a 46-year-old quarterback,
no,
it's probably not, in terms of long-term, a good job. The Saints aren't looking for a new coach. I don't think the Falcons are in the market yet for a new coach with Smith there. NFC West, Cliff Kingsbury is going to be gone, I would think.
Yeah.
But Kyler Murray's not staying healthy, right? L.A. Rams, by the way, don't forget. A lot of people say Sean McVay is going to leave and head to the broadcast booth. But that's not a great situation. They, you know, they have no draft picks, and they're relying on a quarterback who potentially, in terms of, you know, career injuries, is never going to be the same. So I don't think the Rams is actually a good job. You're out there in L.A. Do people think that's a good job? Probably not.
There was talk about Sean Payton taking it.
I don't see Payton wanting that job.
It
makes no sense for him to take that job. That is not a good job.
Because he wants to live in L.A. That's what the word is. He wants to live in L.A.
All right, the Chargers are a better job. But I don't think Brandon Staley's getting fired. What, are they 9-6?
Yeah, they're in the playoffs.
They're in the playoffs. I don't think he's getting fired. So unless he, you know, listen, they can give him a 6-year deal for a lot of money with job security. Then maybe Sean Payton says, all right, I'll put up with the potential of a quarterback search. But a lot of it's pretty interesting. It really is pretty interesting when you think about it and you break it down. All right, you know, college football season, bowl games rolling along, the NFL, of course, heading into week 16 of the season. Mike Daniel of the Dolphins talking about Tua Tagovailoa. You don't want to miss that because obviously that's a big issue in terms of his health. That's coming up next. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich. It's the Rich Eisen Show. It is the Rich Eisen Show on a Wednesday. Dan Schwartzman in for Rich. Holiday week. Hope you're getting some good R&R this weekend. Or honestly, by the way, the flight delays are unbelievable. Have you been reading up on that? What is going on with Southwest? Weren't they considered like the best airline for a long time? Like,
They're
the one making money always. They're the one always with getting good customer satisfaction reviews and things like that. My goodness, they have like thousands and thousands of flights that have been canceled. And I go on Twitter and I've been reading the horror stories. Like, you can't get through on their customer service line. It's been ringing busy for hours upon hours. You direct message, nothing. There's like no response from them. And I believe the government's now going to be looking into them because this is outrageous. Like,
outrageous. But I do have a story about that.
Oh, I want to hear it.
Hustler Club in Las Vegas. Oh, man. If you show them a canceled ticket, you get free entry and a free drink.
Really?
Yeah. At least the Hustler. I saw the Hustler Club. The story said gentlemen's clubs.
Plural. Really? That's ingenious, by the way. Honestly speaking, that's legitimately
ingenious. Come to Vegas,
ingenious.
You get free admission and a free drink.
Yeah, why not?
For
Great marketing. That is a great marketing tool with them. I have to give them a ton of credit for that. That is really brilliant. I mean,
I got to come up with a canceled ticket.
You get one free drink?
I saw it. One free drink and free admission. Hopefully that comes with a lap dance, too. That would be
fun. I would hope it comes with something, right? I mean, first of all, how much could it... Well, I guess drinks are, actually. What is admission to a place like that? I've never been there.
$25, probably.
That's fairly expensive.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's
it's
not
Vegas.
That cheap.
It's
I gotta Vegas. Say. Yeah, it's Vegas. That's true. Vegas, baby, Vegas. Wow. But I listen, you know, people are trying to get home. And the worst to me is people that have plan vacations, they have hotel reservations, they have, you know, hotel, you know, restaurant reservations, maybe it's a special occasion, people want to get engaged, whatever it might be, and they go to these, you know, they go to the airport to check in. Next thing you know, they're finding out their flights are canceled. Sometimes they don't even know. They've gotten no warning that the flight is canceled until they get up to to pick up their boarding pass, and then they're told right then and there that it's been canceled. Like, come on, you can't be doing that. You got to have a little bit more sense there, and look, I wouldn't yell at the people at the gate. It's not their fault. You know, they're not the reason why your flight's canceled, but they are getting hammered right now. Absolutely hammered. And I do feel bad for people that have planned vacations. And by the way, I've heard other stories of literally, this is crazy, Art, where it's been a case where they have had, you know, no warning, and all they've gotten was, we can put you on a flight a week from now.
Wow.
Like, I've read that happen on Twitter.
What are you
going
to do for the whole week?
Exactly. Like, what are you going to do for that week? You know, your kids have school. You have a job.
that you have to get back to. Like, what do you mean you're going to get me on a flight in a week? That's not acceptable. No one's going to accept that. This is going to be multiple lawsuits. This is going to be like class action lawsuit coming up, guaranteed, and rightfully so.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can't be saying, hey, sorry about this. We can get you on a flight, but it's going to be a week from now. Uh-uh. I can rent a car and drive across country faster than that.
Yeah, depending on where you are. Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, I can go L.A. to New York in 5 days, right? I mean, you got to drive a ton. You'll be on the road 10 hours a day. But still, you can literally get there faster than waiting for that flight in a week.
It sounds like you've done it.
I've never done it. And I've honestly, I've never actually had a situation where I had a flight fully canceled. I've obviously had a flight delayed. I had a flight that was originally canceled. I was able to rebook another flight, and then the original flight opened back up, and I was able to rebook back onto that.
You're lucky.
Actually, that was a bad case because I was in Europe. I was in Spain, and I was flying. I think it was Norwegian, which does not fly international anymore. And they were great. I liked them. Cheap, you know, good new airplanes. And I was with a couple of buddies in Barcelona, a couple that I'm good friends with. And they're like, hey, you know, it's going to be your last day before flying out tomorrow. Let's go to like the mountains, like a cool area, right? And then I get this thing saying, hey, your flight's been canceled. So I'm, you know, calling customer service.
Scrambling.
I'm on hold for a couple hours, you know, things like that. And we end up, I say, listen, I don't think we can go to the mountains today because, you know, I got to be on the phone and I got to figure this out. I got to get back to New York at some point. And, you know, we still had a great day that, listen, you can't have a bad day in Barcelona, Spain. But in the end, they end up booking me on another flight. And then I see that the old flight opens again. So I had to rebook onto that. But it worked out. I didn't have to wait a week. And I was able to get back when I originally wanted to. It was just an inconvenience, I guess, is the best way to put it. But, man, I do feel sorry for you out there if you are stranded and, you know. And by the way, I don't understand. Like, Art, I've been doing, you know, reading on this. I've been trying to figure it out. Is there a reason for this? Is it a lack of pilots?
Yeah, I was filling in on the Mark Levine show the other night.
Right.
I was screening. And there had one caller called up and said, there's not enough pilots. You know, we're not in a wartime situation, so there's not enough pilots out there to fill these flights.
So this is a pilot shortage for Southwest.
That's what she thinks. Yeah, her analysis, the caller's analysis was.
Okay, but if that's the case, how many pilots are they short right now? It's got to be a massive amount.
That's a good question. Yeah,
to
absolutely.
To be canceling thousands of flights.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, other airlines I've seen, you know, a couple canceled, a few hundred here and there, right? It was a few hundred. It was, you know, things like that. But, man, unbelievable. Incredible. Good luck to people out there to try to figure things out, all right?
How wrestling really works and how you get the ratings. Eric Bischoff and Conrad Thompson explain on 83 Weeks.
You're either growing or you're dying. I think it would be hard to recreate the kind of growth that WCW experienced between 95 and 98. This audience should be growing. The characters should be coming more, and they're not. Everybody's gradually losing audience. Now, people will say, well, but AEW is 15% ahead of where they were last year. But there's variables there. Let's see where we're at a year from now.
83 Weeks on YouTube or wherever you listen.